Alyssa Johnson is with the Native Women's Association of Canada. They, along with the Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies, initiated a complaint to the Canadian Human Rights Commission. The complaint is concerning discrimination against women in prison based on sex, race, and disability. Alyssa was a delegate and presenter to the Canadian Human Rights Commission special investigation in May 2003. She starts here by talking about the conditions for Aboriginal women inside Canadian prisons.
The reality for federally sentenced women prisoners who happen to be Aboriginal is that they are probably the most at-risk group. And why I use the term at-risk is that's the terminology that Corrections Canada uses quite liberally for women is risk factor. And what I'm saying is that based on our knowledge and experience with federally sentenced Aboriginal women, they are the ones who are at risk. By entering into the prison system, most of them have been victims themselves, and they get further victimized while they're inside. This complaint process talks about the treatment of federal women prisoners. But we specify on federally sentenced Aboriginal women prisoners. And the fact that, their disability, the higher rate of incarceration, we are overrepresented. We make up about 1.5 to 2% of the population in Canada. 27% of the women inside in federal prisons are Aboriginal. And then those serving time in maximum security, about 50% of those are Aboriginal women. So it's a drastic overrepresentation. We are at risk the minute we enter into a penal system of being one of those statistics. So when we talk about race, that's it. The disability factor comes again that many of our women deal with so many emotional issues from childhood. From living in our communities, from the numerous years of oppression that we've suffered as Aboriginal people in Canada, that we end up with a lot of mental disabilities as well. So they come from not being able to effectively deal with or cope with or heal from the issues that we have been subjected to. So our women who enter the penal system often are labeled or are given the distinction of being mentally unbalanced or having a mental disorder or being mentally disabled. So again, that's another area where I say women are at risk if you're Aboriginal entering into the judicial system. The whole thing around it is that more and more of our women are being placed into maximum security. More prisons are being built with maximum security units. We now have the 5 regional women's facilities. We have more women now in prison than when Prison for Women was open in Kingston. They never thought they'd be able to fulfill that process. That, you know, why would we need 5 regional facilities? We don't have that number of women in prison. We've exacerbated the number by a long shot. And unfortunately, there's a large majority of those women are Aboriginal. So the human rights complaint really comes from our belief that Aboriginal women have less access than even the average woman prisoner, based on the fact that they are Aboriginal, based on the fact that they're often labeled as mentally disabled, and based on the fact that just as Aboriginal women alone, that race, the gender, and then the disability puts them at risk. We lodged the complaint in conjunction with Canadian Association of Elizabeth Fry Societies, based on the fact that Aboriginal women have less access to programs and services, who come at that from a cultural or a spiritual viewpoint. We keep hearing that culture and spirituality is a philosophy. It is not a religion, therefore it is not recognized. There are commissioner's directives which tell the institutions how they are supposed to provide those programs and services. The reality is that from institution to institution, from correctional officer to correctional officer, that'll change. So there's no consistency. The treatment that you may receive in an institution where it has a high number of Aboriginal women may be positive because of the numbers and the demands. But if you're like the one woman who I visited last year at Nova Institution, who is one woman, where I had an official from that institution say, I have a hard time justifying the expenditure of monies for one woman. So I educated her on the reasons why those dollars needed to be spent on that one woman, based on the fact that she was Aboriginal. So we end up with a whole process at this time where we have entered into the complaint. We have moved beyond that. We've done our submissions. We have gotten to the point where we're looking for remedy. We're looking for some solution. We're looking for someone to say that the Government of Canada, through the Correctional Services of Canada, needs to start to address the issues that are rampantly happening, the discrimination that's rampant amongst the institutions. And being an Aboriginal woman is a risk factor. So the risk factor is not to themselves or other inmates or to the community at large. It is a risk factor based on being institutionalized, incarcerated, and it's on behalf of those women. They are at risk from Correctional Services Canada and the policies and procedures that are there in dealing with federally sentenced women.
From the dozens of reports and inquiries over the years, the problems facing women in prison are well documented. Correctional Service of Canada acknowledges these problems. Remedies have been repeatedly recommended. Alyssa Johnson explains what she sees as the reasons why many of these remedies and changes have not been made.
The remedies and changes haven't been made, and I have to be honest in saying that I don't believe it's because the Aboriginal Initiatives Branch of Correctional Services Canada doesn't want it to happen. I believe they do. But we're talking about a small piece in a very large dysfunctional family called Correctional Service Canada. So even though there are people there who I believe are trying to push the envelope and move it forward, it's like trying to go 100 miles an hour with your brakes on. So what ends up happening is, you know, we've seen that Correctional Services Canada has the opportunity but doesn't really follow through. Or they use things like calling sweats, the attendance of sweat lodge ceremonies or change of season ceremonies or full moon ceremonies or any kind of Aboriginal cultural program. And they use the term program so liberally and so loosely that what is considered to be a spiritual inherent right, like attending a sweat lodge, like attending a full moon ceremony, to mean that they're receiving Aboriginal programs. That's not true. We don't classify a non-Aboriginal person attending church on Sunday, Christmas Eve service, Easter service, Lenten service, a Bible class study, or a choral group as program. We call that religion, and it's separate from. So why does CSC, as well as a number, do that? You know, they talk about it in that manner. So we've really had to start to question some of their behavior. And in particular, we do that because even the Solicitor General of Canada, Mr. Wayne Easter, in March at a conference for the Solicitor General called What Works in Community Reintegration, you know, stood and talked about the over-representation of Aboriginal offenders, that Aboriginal people are comprising a large majority of the population in some institutions, that were overrepresented on every level, and that something needs to be done to address those factors. Unfortunately, he was the only person in three full days of conferencing that ever mentioned Aboriginal people. And it was interesting because it was What Works in Community Release and Reintegration, and not a word was mentioned about Aboriginal offenders. So obviously, we were sure that nothing really worked. And I think that's because a lot of the avenues are being shut down one by one. A prime example of that is Section 81. Section 81 of the Corrections and Conditional Release Act is a piece of legislation that talks specifically about the care and custody of Aboriginal offenders and non-Aboriginal offenders being able to access the Aboriginal community for care and custody. It's a unique piece of legislation that allows the Aboriginal community to be involved at the beginning of sentencing. So from the moment an offender receives their sentence, that Aboriginal community or any Aboriginal community, and we're using that term quite loosely, community can be an Aboriginal organization in a metropolitan area. It can be an elder's home in a First Nation or metropolitan community. It can be a friendship center. It can be a First Nation. It can be a Métis community. It can be an Inuit community. It really doesn't matter. There's a large, broad opening for that. They have been able to be involved from the beginning of sentencing. to provide the care and custody. Now, they have to enter into an agreement, and there's a lot of process to it. And we have a number of them. There's only one for women at this point, and that's Okemahochee Healing Lodge in Maple Creek, Saskatchewan. But the opportunity is there for an offender to say, my community wants to provide for my care. And my community could be, you know, the Native Women's Association of Canada or the Friendship Center in Sioux Lookout. What's happened recently is that there's been a number of reviews being ordered or recommended by Correctional Service Canada and probably their partners. I believe it's an issue of finance and capacity and resource, because at this point in time, budgets have been severely hampered in Correctional Service Canada and probably across every department in the government. So their budget restrictions have had an effect. And so there has been an unofficial hold, or, you know, I use the term moratorium. They were a little offended by that. But it's been an unofficial hold on Section 81 facilities being built or any agreements being entered into. So that means that they're currently going to look at what works now in their programming for Section 81. They're going to be reviewing that and evaluating it. By whom and by when, I'm not sure. They haven't stated that. I have been told by CSC, people within the Aboriginal Initiative Branch, that there have been offenders who have had to be denied Section 81 placements because of the facilities being under review, because there are no new facilities being looked at this time, and as a result of money. Money is an issue. It costs a fair bit of money to run a healing lodge or a Section 81 facility, and they always use the term healing lodge. However, I don't believe that, you know, a healing lodge is necessarily what you would call it. It's a Section 81 facility. However that takes place, I think depends on the individual agreement. There is a number of them, and I don't want to quote the number that are out there for men right now, but for women there is only one. And I think it becomes an issue for us at the Native Women's Association, because in particular the BC Native Women's Society, which is one of our provincial affiliates, one of our associations, has been interested in looking at building or entering into agreement with Corrections and the Solicitor General to have a Section 81 facility in the interior of BC. Why that's significant is because Aboriginal women have been, or women prisoners have been held at the Burnaby Correctional Center previously and are being moved to Sumas, which used to be a correctional center, is now going to be the women's prison. And so it's fairly close to the interior. And they were looking at the possibility then of being able to provide a linkage for women to come to a Section 81 facility. And what I've had to tell them as of last week is that I don't know that that is ever going to be a possibility at this time. I have no idea. So plans that we've had, unfortunately, may have to be withheld.
Correctional Service of Canada's own reports have shown that recidivism rates, the rates of reoffending, have been far lower at the Okemahochee Healing Lodge than at other facilities. Why, then, do they not allocate their money to more successful projects such as this one? Alyssa Johnson explains.
I think what the response would be to that, if you were looking at it, you know, all on a big map, you know, and able to map it out, what I would see is that they're looking then at an alternative that's cost-effective, and that is to say, we can still involve the Aboriginal community, but we do it in a different manner. And so we're still providing for the Aboriginal community to have access, or the offender to have access to the community in a way that's less expensive, so more cost-effective. And that's by getting Aboriginal organizations involved to provide some of the services. It's by looking at the voluntary manner in which they can involve Aboriginal communities. So it's things like, if they can get another organization to set up a Section 81 facility, I'm sure they'd be happy to enter into an agreement with that, or to look into it anyways, to investigate the validity of it. So if I could get the BC Native Women's Society, along with the First Nations, along with whatever other organization, to look at an existing building and renovate and provide it and say, bring us your these women who are, you know, currently, in BC or from BC to come to this lodge, I'm sure they would look at that, and if, you know, all of the liability issues were covered, they'd enter into an agreement with them. It's about money. So they're looking at Aboriginal organizations who are involved with federally sentenced women, in particular Aboriginal women, as an avenue to kind of cut corners. And that's really what it is, you know, it's cutting corners. Or they're looking at the potential of, you know, something that we've been looking at with CSC's assistance by a long shot, really, is the private home placement model, where women would apply for day parole or full parole, and they would be basically billeted to a woman's home, and she would be a role model and a partnering kind of system. Again, the capacity for that has always been that it's only ever operated in Edmonton out of the Edmonton Elizabeth Fry Society in conjunction with Edmonton Institute for Women. And to expand that would mean that we would need coordinators to organize the program across different areas of the country. But there are no monies right now for that to happen. So, again, we're back to how can the Aboriginal community make it happen without it costing CSC money?
Correctional Service of Canada says that they do not have money to build a healing lodge in British Columbia. At the same time, they are spending money to open a new maximum security women's prison in British Columbia. The Burnaby Correctional Centre for Women plans to close in 2004. Federal women currently being held there will move to the Sumas Centre near Abbotsford, BC. They are building a maximum unit within this prison. They have recently built maximum units in the other regional prisons for women across Canada.
And it's costing millions of dollars, not just to build those facilities, but to staff those facilities. I mean, the complement of staff that the women's facilities have had in the last recent months has been astronomical. Over 60 new staff hired at Nova Institution in Truro, Nova Scotia. It's a small little facility. We're talking about a women's prison, which, if you were to look at it from the outside, looks like a small community school with some townhouses, you know? So when you look at them, they don't really look like a prison the way we think of, you know, Kingston prison, you know, or prison for women. It's not that kind of looking facility anymore. You know, they talk about them being quite lovely. That was used by one of the wardens, was, it's quite lovely here. And I thought, you don't live here, so it must be okay for you. But I don't think prison is lovely no matter how you dress the walls, you know. So I think when we look at, you know, the cost effectiveness, no, these units are not cost effective. I mean, there are some horrendous issues around these. My perception of them when I was in Edmonton Institution for Women was looking at that facility was in the process of being built. And I thought back to my experience going to the San Diego Zoo and watching a very large panther in a cage, and the pacing and how the ground had been worn down rock hard. Even over his living unit, you know, and the pacing back and forth, how he watched us, how he looked at us. And I was really trying to process what was going through that animal's mind, and realizing that that's no different than how our women are going to be treated in those institutions' maximum security units, because they're going to be fenced in within the fence. They're going to have everybody else looking at them if they're even allowed out into the yard. But it will be like being caged within the cage. It's very punitive, very punitive. So, yeah, there are some major concerns for me. One of the things I do is I'm on a national working group for Aboriginal corrections that's made up of the 7 recognized national Aboriginal organizations. And we work with Correctional Service Canada. That's who funds my position, to look at what's being done, checks and balances, basically. I won't say that everything Corrections Canada does is wrong. What I will say is that the majority of women who are in prison should never have been sent to prison in the first place. Do I think that prison is an effective manner in dealing with women? Absolutely not. Do I think that Aboriginal women should be placed in a prison setting? No, and I don't care what security classification you've been given. Aboriginal women need to be in our homes, in our communities, within the Aboriginal organization, world, and society, in order to reclaim who they are, to reclaim their dignity, and to be successful partners in this world. So that's what I would like to be seeing, and that's exactly what we're going to be doing.
That was Alyssa Johnson. She's with the Native Women's Association of Canada. She was a delegate and presenter to the Canadian Human Rights Commission Special Investigation into Discrimination Against Women in Prison.